It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals deciding merely on whether or not the president's travel ban should remain in effect, not on the larger issue of the constitutionality of the executive order. At a hearing that got heated last night, a three-judge panel hammered away at the administration over their motivation for the ban.
Has the government pointed to any evidence connecting these countries with terrorism?
In 2015 and 2016, both Congress and the administration made determinations that these seven countries posed the greatest risk of terrorism, and in doing so, restricted visa waiver to people who had even traveled to those countries over the last 5 or 6 years. The executive order relies on that determination.
The judge is also pressing the attorneys from Washington State and Minnesota to prove harm.
The executive order itself that caused irreparable harm to our states, to Washington and Minnesota and our residents.
What's the irreparable harm to the state of Washington?
We had students and faculty at our state universities who were stranded overseas. We had families that were separated. We had longtime residents who could not travel overseas to visit their families without knowing that they would be able to come back.
And earlier in the day, the president expressing frustration over the case.
I actually can't believe that we're having to fight to protect the security. And a lot of people agree with us, believe me. They want to see our borders secure and our country secure.
So we wait for the decision, and guys, it's interesting to note that this hearing conducted over the phone and made public via live streaming may have topped more than a million listeners for a pretty dry hearing.
All right, that was Griff Jenkins this morning on Fox and Friends. This is Sandy Rios in the morning, and of course, you know the Ninth Circuit is deliberating. The Ninth Circus, I should say. That was an amazing exchange, and we're going to talk about that at length with Hans von Spakovsky in a few minutes. Who was that defender at the Justice Department, and who were those judges, and do they have a right to be stopping the President of the United States from his constitutional duty to protect us? But I want to get practical just for a second, because I want to share a couple of stories with you. What are we being protected from? What is the concern about an oversized influx of Sharia-adherent Muslims? What's the concern? Well, I'll just give you a story. This came out. Today's yesterday. A Muslim father in Ohio brutally honor kills his son. Rocky River police confirmed that Jamal Mansour, who was 63, killed his 27-year-old daughter. She died from 2 gunshot wounds to the head. It took place in Rocky River, Ohio, around 1 a.m. in the morning. 10 hours later, she died in the hospital from her wounds. Family members admitted there was an argument shortly before her death. However, the family is saying that Jamal only accidentally killed her because of his diabetes. Lieutenant George Lichtman with the Rocky River Police said the following: "We don't have a solid motive other than an argument occurred between a father and his daughter. We had the fire department respond and do an evaluation. It turns out that the father was not under any medical care at the time of the incident, and since he's been in our jail. Jamal has been arrested and charged with homicide, felonious assault, and domestic violence. He killed his daughter in front of his family. It was the brother that called the police, and it was an honor killing." And this in, what, Rocky River, Ohio. There's an article this morning, which I actually plan to spend more time on when we have time. I'm going to devote probably a show to this. Ezra Levant is a Canadian media personality. I'll just mention his part of this. He did a video talking about the increase in rapes and sexual assaults in Canada, telling graphic stories, unbelievable stories of Islamic immigrants raping women and young girls in Canada, and then the media not talking about it and people reporting it, actually being threatened, veiled threats by the police. You know, if you don't stop, you know, reporting this, we'll report you as a bad mother for not taking better care of your daughter. That's a story that he tells. Certainly, I played for you over and over again the case in Sweden where it's becoming the rape capital of the world from Muslim immigrants. These are the kinds of things that President Donald Trump is trying to stop. Meanwhile, you know, the Women's March goes on. You know, one of the heads of the Women's March was a Sharia-compliant Muslim woman. It is unbelievable the ignorance with which we are operating. And so this is what the president is trying to do. He's trying to stop for a time, halt it, just to get a handle on this, get a better vetting process. But it's, you know, something that's just absolutely unbelievably appalling to the left because they are so ignorant, including our kids in public school, absolutely ignorant. Catherine Herridge gives a report last night about General Kelly, who's now the head of Department of Homeland Security, testifying before a committee in Congress. Let's listen.
The largest opening in the most uncontrolled part of our border is the southwest border.
In his first congressional testimony as Secretary, Homeland Security Chief John Kelly did not back away from the administration's commitment to the wall and the travel ban.
Americans must feel safe to walk down the street, go to the mall, or to a nightclub. Anywhere and anytime. Fair must not become the status quo.
Lawmakers press Kelly on whether his own Customs and Border Patrol agents think a physical wall is necessary.
Has somebody at CBP told you that we need a 2,000-mile wall built along that border?
Maybe there are some places that are too rugged to put a wall, and we cover that with patrolling in technology.
While taking some blame for the travel ban rollout, Kelly said the seven mostly Muslim nations are either not cooperating or can't provide reliable intelligence.
For the last number of years, the vetting is at best loose, and the amount of information, you take some of these countries we're talking about that are in really state of fail states.
The pause will give us time to enhance security checks to stop terrorists from using our immigration system as a Trojan horse.
Republicans and Democrats push Kelly for evidence terrorists have slipped into the U.S. as refugees.
You don't have any proof at this point.
Not until the boom.
Not until what?
Not until they act and blow something up or go into a mall and kill people. So we won't know until then.
There's a new sheriff in town.
That's, I hear, right.
There's
so.
At the White House, President Trump reinforced his message by hosting county sheriffs, many from border states.
Let me tell you the difference of 6 months. I sat in this room, in this chair, and I was pleading. I was begging for help.
It was 180 degrees from what we heard from the previous administration.
And we were seeing a big difference.
We're very proud to have you as president.
Secretary Kelly said he is an advocate for social media screening, and visa applicants who refuse to comply will be blocked from entering the U.S. On the travel ban, Kelly said he is confident the administration will prevail in court, offering lawmakers today no plan B.
All right. That was Catherine Herridge again from Fox. And all of this, very interesting. You know, we're going to talk at length with Hans in just a second about what's going on in the Ninth Circuit. But the point I want to make with you in this moment is the blowback from this. We are really at another precipice, and you can see the opposition is formidable, not just on this, but on everything that Donald Trump is doing and his staff. You see the attacks against Steve Bannon, the front page cover on, I think it was Time magazine, you know, portraying him as such an evil person. It's just an Ivanka Trump, the daughter. Now we know Macy's is thinking about dropping Ivanka Trump's. Nordstrom already has her clothing line. Now Belk, based out of Charlotte, has just dropped her line as well as and some online retailers. You know, this is they have a right to do that. So you and I have a right not to shop there, right? Because really, we have to think about what's best for America. Obviously, the left isn't thinking about that. Some of them are just ignorant, and others are out to destroy and undermine. And so the ignorance combines with the evil intention of the far left, and that it has a very bad outcome. So, I told you, I am tearing up my Nordstrom credit card. Only reason I haven't done it is I just have been busy. I'm going to tear it up. I'm sending it back. I'm not shopping there. Macy's the same way. If they do that, if they follow through, Belk the same way. So, you do what you want, but I'm suggesting we let our money go to companies that don't do things that try to harm this country or blackmail this president from doing what we believe is right to make the country safe, for heaven's sake. And along with that, Melania Trump is filing a $150 million libel suit against the Daily Mail because they printed a piece saying that she worked for an escort service in the 1990s. She has sued them before, and it was filed in Maryland, and something happened about the venue, so it was thrown out, not because of the case, but because of the venue, the place, Maryland. So she's refiling that lawsuit. Can you imagine the embarrassment of that? The attacks against his family are unbelievable. The attacks against the staff are unbelievable. Kellyanne Conway being called all kinds of names and threats. Now she has to have Secret Service protection. So it's not time for us to stop encouraging. I would say we need, for one thing, just keep in mind that the left is trying to discourage mainstream America. This is what they do, trying to discourage us, also trying to discourage the president and his team. And they're very effective at it. And so we just have to keep our eyes on the big prize, the big picture. I think, you know, this is like the living a life as a Christian. My husband and I were talking about this yesterday when things, there are things that are just set you aside, that just waylay you, whether they're health issues, family concerns, things that just threaten to derail you. And yet you know that God is sovereign and that there is a larger thing going on here. It's not your story, it's his story. And we will continue to be faithful and don't believe everything that you hear. Don't believe the screaming voices on the left that translates to numbers, because we saw what happened in the election and we know what the numbers were, that people voted for Donald Trump because they believed he was right about these things. And so keep your head on and keep your courage, and let's do what we can in the meanwhile. Let's pray for this president and his staff. And let's do some practical things, too. By the way, Judicial Watch has just released an interesting report. Eric Holder has gone to work in California with a major law firm, and he's being paid now $25,000 a month. I'll just read it the way they put it here. It's going to pay, the state of California is going to pay the law firm of Eric Holder $25,000 a month for 40 hours of work each month, for providing, quote, legal strategies regarding potential actions of the federal government that may be of concern to the state of California. In other words, anything that they can do to oppose Donald Trump, that's what Eric Holder is going to do. Eric Holder, the former attorney general, was held in contempt of Congress. That attorney general, fast and furious, unbelievably lied before Congress, oversaw some Benghazi, just disgraceful, really. Under normal circumstances, he would be completely disgraced. But now the state of California is going to pay him $25,000 a month to undermine President Donald Trump in the state of California and other places, too, I'm sure, if he has a chance. I was going to say something about, I better say something quickly. A couple of things. This is the priority. We are partnering with India Partners, and we, you know, India Partners, we've discussed it a lot. They try to help little girls who are being trafficked in India. They're being sold as young as 8 in the red light areas of Mumbai. They're forced to work in brothels against their will, and many becoming mothers when they're really young. And they grow up in this place surrounded by sexual abuse and violence. Well, India Partners is trying to get those girls out. And $7.08 provides one day of safety, rescue, and care for a child escaping the red light district. If you can afford any amount today, 2 weeks, by the way, would be $100 a month. For a month of safety and rescue and care. And you can do the math, but $7.08 is just one day. $50 provides about a week, so $100, 2 weeks. So there you go. And the phone number is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or go to AFR.net and do what you always do. Be generous. You always are. And I thank God for all of you. Again, the phone number is 877-616-2396. Hans von Spakovsky, we're going to talk about the Ninth Circuit when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa! Why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
We desperately need the light of the gospel to shatter the darkness that is sweeping through our land.
Evangelist Sammy Tippett for Fusion, the Heart Cry for Revival Conference.
We're asking Christian leaders to join us in seeking God for a mighty work of His Spirit in this critical hour. I've seen God transform entire nations, places like Romania, where God dispelled the darkness of atheism through the prayers of His people. I want to share with you how God did that and what He can do in our nation. So join me at the Heart Cry for Revival Fusion Conference.
Sponsored in part by American Family Association, the Fusion Conference will be April 23rd through the 27th in the Billy Graham Training Center at The Cove in Asheville, North Carolina. Register at heartcryforrevival.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. Now, most folks would need to go to medical school or law school to make a six-figure salary, but not in San Francisco. As a matter of fact, you don't need any college education at all. All you have to be is a janitor for the Bay Area's transit system. Investigators with the San Francisco Chronicle discovered at least 49 janitors made more than $100,000 a year in 2015. That's $100,000 of your tax money to sweep floors and empty trash cans. One guy hauled in nearly $300,000 in just 1 year. Transit officials defended the high-dollar paycheck. They say the janitor worked 17 hours a day. But surveillance video discovered by television station KTVU shows the janitor disappearing into a closet where he would stay for hours at a time, doing Lord knows what. Well, for that much money, he ought to be doing the laundry. And windows, too. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
ISIS said, we are going to infiltrate the United States and other countries through the migration. And then we're not allowed to be tough on the people coming in? Explain that one. So we'll see what happens. We have a big court case. We're well represented. And we're going to see what happens.
Is it going to go to the Supreme Court, you think?
Good. I mean, we'll see. Hopefully it doesn't happen. It's common sense. You know, some things are law, and I'm all in favor of that. And some things are common sense. This is common sense now.
All right. That was the President of the United States, Donald Trump, stating. I don't think defending is the right term. He's just stating what's true. And most of us say, yeah, that's true. I just talked to you about the stories that are coming about out, even in Ohio, just in the last, I don't exactly know when they dated this, but the report was yesterday, this man who honor killed his daughter in front of his family, shot her in the head twice. We've talked about Sweden and the rape culture there. We talked about Europe, the sexual assaults on women. This is what we are importing, along with jihadis who want to undermine, I guess that's why the left likes them. They have evil intent for this country. Not every single Muslim, but certainly Sharia-adherent Muslims, and that's why we must vet them It is common sense, but not so common if you are part of the leftist culture. Hans von Spakovsky joins us this morning. He's a senior legal fellow at Heritage. I'm really eager to talk to you, Hans, because that Ninth Circuit of Court audio that we heard yesterday, and let me just say there were three judges in the Ninth Circuit who are hearing the appeal on the stay of Donald Trump's orders that there be a halt on refugee resettlement and also just a stay on people coming into the country till we can figure out exactly what's going on. You would think the world had ended with all the demonstrations that ensued. And now a judge in Seattle and a judge in Minnesota were able, by some miracle, to stop the whole thing nationally. So now the Trump administration is arguing in front of the Ninth Circuit, at least they did yesterday, their justification as though they needed to. So, Hans, so that's a sloppy retelling, but that's basically what's happening. What is the Ninth Circuit? What are they trying to decide? What's their area that they're supposed to be determining?
Well, a Washington State federal judge issued a temporary restraining order that says that the Trump administration cannot enforce the executive order that it issued. So what the government did is they filed an emergency appeal with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which has jurisdiction over Washington State, asking that the stay, the temporary restraining order, be lifted so that the government can enforce this order. And that's the arguments that were being heard yesterday before the Ninth Circuit.
All right. So my understanding, Hans, is there are multiple lawsuits being filed to stop this order. I think something 36 or something like that. But they each address a different portion. So, again, I ask just because my own mind here, the Ninth Circuit, their particular piece of this is supposed to be what?
Well, see, that's the odd thing, and that's part of what the government was arguing yesterday. I mean, Washington State, their attorney general, attacked parts of the executive order, in particular the suspension of visas from the seven terrorist countries. Apparently, they want people that from coming in from these terrorist countries in Washington State. But the judge in the case went far beyond, actually, what Washington State was asking for, and he issued a temporary restraining order stopping the entire executive order, which, of course, is part of the problem. Also, look, federal district court judges are judges in one of a little less than 100 federal districts in the United States. Normally, a district judge, his order doesn't extend beyond his particular district. In this case, since it was Washington State, his order shouldn't extend beyond Washington, not for the rest of the country. Otherwise, you have mass chaos from the other almost 100 federal district court judges that could possibly be ruling on this around the country.
So how did Judge James Robart get away with this? Why are people taking this seriously? And who would step in and say, you can't do that? Who would say that?
Well, it should be the Court of Appeals. But remember, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is the most liberal appeals court in the country. 80 to 90% of its decisions are overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. And it's very clear, for example, from the arguments yesterday, that the Obama appointee on the three-judge panel clearly is going to side with Washington State against the government. It doesn't matter what the law or the facts is. And, Sandy, this is an important point. Everybody's talking about this Washington State order. Nobody's talking about the federal district court judge in Massachusetts who at virtually the exact same time that this Washington State judge was issuing a temporary restraining order, the Massachusetts judge refused to do so. Why? He had an extensive discussion in his order of the federal immigration statute on which the president based his authority to do this, and basically said the president is acting perfectly lawfully. He's doing exactly what Congress gave him the power to do. Contrast that with the short order in the Washington State case where the judge makes absolutely no mention of, has no discussion of, federal immigration law or the Constitution. Clearly, the Washington State judge just issued his decision. Why? Not because of the law, but because he personally thinks this is bad public policy.
Hans, you know, I read your article, and by the way, we'll post this on our Facebook page. Trump's executive order on immigration is both legal and constitutional, and you cite the Massachusetts decision. And I wonder, you know, this is the first I had heard of this. Even, I mean, why is no one reporting that? The things we are hearing, even on Fox, which, of course, that's another subject. Fox is not good on this issue from my perspective. But they keep talking about all of the negatives, like the six, I think there are 16 other attorney generals that have agreed with the attorney general of Seattle and Minnesota. And they never, I haven't heard anything about this Massachusetts judge. Why do you think that is?
Well, because nobody's interested in that. You know, that decision doesn't lie along the narrative they're pushing in the press. And look, everybody is overcomplicating this case. This case is actually supremely simple. I can lay it out to you in three steps. Look, the Constitution gives 100% authority over immigration issues to Congress. Congress passed a statute. It's a very short provision. It's very straightforward. It's one paragraph, in which they delegated to the president the power to suspend the entry of any aliens, if he believes their entry would be detrimental to the United States, period. And that's exactly what the president has done. That is an almost unlimited discretion given to the president to do this. And no federal judge sitting in a little district in Washington State has the right under our constitutional system to substitute his judgment, because that's what he's doing, for the president's on what would be detrimental to the national security of the United States.
So the Ninth Circuit, if they were playing their constitutional role, would immediately say, you don't have standing to make a broad sweeping ruling like this, you know, kind of putting him back in his place. But instead, last night we heard snippets, and I'm sure you heard them too, Hans, and I'm really curious to know what your thoughts are. Three judges, you mentioned an Obama appointee, a Carter appointee, and I think a George W. Bush appointee. Those are the three judges. You listened to the exchange. What did you think?
I thought the lawyer that the Justice Department set in poorly argued the case. I would have been much stronger in my arguments. I think Washington State was also weak in their presentation, but it's very clear to me, like I said, we've got an Obama, a Carter, and a George W. Bush judge. It's very clear to me, I can guarantee you 100% which way the Obama judge is going to rule on this. The George W. Bush judge, I don't know. It seemed like he was wavering back and forth. And the Carter judge, I don't know either, because, as you know, he didn't ask that many questions. I'm afraid that the Ninth Circuit is going to go with Washington State, and then it's going to end up at the Supreme Court, where, as you know, we have a 4-4 split. And I can guarantee you the four liberal justices, they are going to rule against the Trump administration again, no matter what the Constitution or the law says.
Yeah, and we also know Kennedy's kind of willing to do that, too, as he showed us on Obamacare rulings and also on same-sex marriage. So we have no confidence that he'll vote constitutionally either. But
Danny, it's important here to note, look, the Supreme Court has ruled in numerous cases what the power is of the federal government at the border. And there was a case just a little more than a decade ago in which they said the federal government is at the zenith of its power at the border when it comes to deciding who and what to let into the country. There's almost no limit on what the government can do at the border.
Hans, we've talked so much about what's going on at Justice, and you, along with J. Christian Adams, have certainly helped me to understand that there have been so many radical appointments that the Justice Department has been almost completely corrupted. All right, so I heard last night that this attorney from Justice arguing on behalf of President Donald Trump that two other justice attorneys had recused themselves, and this was the third choice. Do you know anything about this attorney? And you already said you think he did a poor job. Do you know anything about him, though?
I don't know anything about him, but I also believe that the two lawyers who recused themselves should be immediately terminated. And the reason for that is, look, government lawyers have an obligation to defend the government, even if personally they don't like a particular policy. And any lawyer who refuses to do that shouldn't be working at the Justice Department. I don't know who this third lawyer is. I'll tell you quite frankly, I do not trust any of the career civil servants inside the Justice Department, particularly those who have been hired during the Obama administration. And I actually think there are some top-notch political appointees now inside Justice. Frankly, one of them should have argued this case.
You know, last night there was an interesting exchange. I was, and knowing you were going to be with me, I'm eager to know. I thought it was very strange, the interaction on the tape between the justices, I don't know who it was, and I believe it was the Attorney General for Washington State. But they were the statement was made, and I couldn't tell who was saying what, that perhaps this decision needs to go back to Judge Robart's court so that they could rewrite their opinion, and then it could come back. And one of the justices said, oh, could we send it back? And I'm thinking, is this normal? I mean, I know already that Judge Robart's decision was very weak. You've already described that, and there's more to say about it. He didn't make a case. He just basically gave an opinion and said broadly it was unconstitutional without making his point, which is very unjudge-like. So they're talking about sending it back, and the judges, one of the justices at least on that three-panel thing, is sort of engaging. Oh, could we send it back? You think would it be sent back? Was that sort of odd to be discussing strategy like that?
Well, no, you know, cases do get remanded, that's the word for it, returned to the lower court saying you have to make further findings. I think, though, in this case, quite frankly, that would be a way for these judges in the Ninth Circuit to pass the buck so that they don't get blamed for a decision going either way, which, as they know, is going to be extremely controversial. And when was the last time? I'll tell you how much attention is being paid. When was the last time you heard oral arguments in a case before an appellate court being played on all the major news networks?
Oh, I know. I thought that was, I mean, I don't, what do I know? I'd never heard of such a thing either.
I haven't either.
So you think that was done for political causes too, or you suspect it? How do we know?
Well, if you go back to the gay marriage case, the Ninth Circuit, the judge, the federal judge in California who heard that case, he also made sure it was broadcast, and I frankly think he did it because he wanted political pressure brought that would influence the decision. The particular judge in that case, it turned out, was gay himself and made rulings that showed that he really wasn't considering the Constitution or the law.
Hans, hang on just a second. I think, just let me say a word to my producers here. If we could go 5 minutes more, Hans, I just have a couple of more questions. So do you mind that?
5 minutes, sure.
Okay. All right. Then we're going to take the break 5 minutes later. All right. So last night, Charles Krauthammer, I have great respect for, I'm sure you do too. He has a lot of wisdom on a lot of things. On this issue, I don't think he has wisdom at all. I've heard him make some, I don't think he fully understands himself. The threat of radical Islam. He does not understand what some of us have been briefed on. And he made a statement last night that this order was ill-advised and that I forgot exactly what his words were, but he was very critical of the order. It was unnecessary. There was no reason to do it. And I thought to myself, Hans, how does he know that the president didn't have intelligence to say they needed to stop? As I understand it, they did send back some people. They made sure they did not come in. So I just think that is a loose comment about which you cannot make the statement that the president didn't have reason to make the order in the timely way that he did. How would we know that would be true?
I'll tell you what I find amazing about all this. Look, more than a year ago, and anybody who doubts me can check this out. Look, more than a year ago, the Obama administration's Department of Homeland Security put out a press release talking about the countries that were countries of concern to them because they have so many terrorists coming out of there. And I think at least five of the seven countries on Trump's list were listed by the Obama administration. And look, we've done these kind of suspensions of visa entries before. The Obama administration did it in 2011 with none of this criticism, no lawsuits, when they suspended entry from Iraq for 6 months. Why? Because two of the people who had been allowed in, it turned out their fingerprints were found on IEDs that had been killing American soldiers in Iraq. This is just a temporary 90-day suspension. Why? So the administration can be sure that we actually have the vetting procedures in place to prevent the kind of things that happened in 2011 and the kind of attacks that we've had all throughout Europe, many by individuals who went in claiming they were refugees.
You know, as another story on this, 6 out of 7 of the countries listed in that temporary ban don't accept Israeli passports because the holders are Jewish. So, you know, it's just amazing. That never gets reported either. Hans, if it goes to the Supreme Court, which I think it likely will, I just don't think there's any way the Ninth Circuit is going to rule in Donald Trump's favor. And so if it goes to the Supreme Court, and we've already alluded to the fact that Kennedy is an unreliable vote, it might come down, you know, 5-3. So what would the Trump administration be left with? Could they write a different executive order with different wording? What could they do?
What they would have to do is go to Congress and get Congress to pass very strong legislation to overturn the Supreme Court's decision and to give them the complete and full authority to do that. And frankly, that statute, one of the things they could consider doing is taking away the jurisdiction of federal courts to even hear these kinds of claims.
So, boy, I tell you, talk about massive amounts of resistance. You know, I was thinking this morning that if President Trump did not understand before, and I'm sure he had some understanding of it, of how important judicial nominations are and of the consequences of the last 8 years of Barack Obama's ministry and also feckless choices by Republicans in the past, the actual consequences of those choices must be really coming home to him right now. In the midst of this?
Oh, absolutely. And let's not forget, yes, he's got a great nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court, but the last time I looked, I think we're up to like over 110 vacancies throughout the rest of the federal courts, at the district court and court of appeals levels. And it is almost as important as the Supreme Court that we get conservative judges who will apply the law and the Constitution as written into all those other seats.
So, Hans, you know that there probably be this kind of resistance. You know, the Democrats are resisting everything right now, all the nominations, all the judicial appointments. Well, there's only one right now, but there'll be more. There's a whole lineup ready to go. But I'm wondering, you know, maybe it might happen that the President Trump may not be able to get some of these appointments through till 2020. I wonder if the courts can wait that long. Are there? You say there are all these vacancies sitting right now?
Well, right now they can't filibuster. Remember, Harry Reid broke the filibuster rule for the lower courts. So
well,
it only
right.
takes 51 votes to get through court of appeals and district court positions. And I actually am fairly confident that if the Democrats try to filibuster Neil Gorsuch, the Supreme Court nominee, I actually think they will force Republicans into a corner, and I think they may break and get rid of the filibuster rule for Supreme Court nominees.
Well, we can only hope so. They certainly shut down Elizabeth Warren last night, which was an unusual action. So maybe
Well, that's a good thing, Sandy, because, in fact, she was citing a letter that had been sent by the former wife of Martin Luther King that was based on totally false information. It was a letter that claimed that Senator Sessions had shut down an FBI investigation of potential voter suppression in Alabama. That, it turned out, was a total lie. The people who made that claim actually had to file affidavits with the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee in which they admitted they had lied. Why? Because it was the prior United States attorney, a Democratic nominee, who had actually shut down that investigation, not Sessions, as they had claimed.
And she knew that when she read the statement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, but the point in this discussion is that they did do something. They actually fought back on something. She is now being banned from any further discussion in the Sessions nomination. So maybe they will find their anger I've been looking forward to that. Hans, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Hans von Spakovsky, again with Heritage Foundation, senior legal fellow. And by the way, his article that talks about the constitutionality of this executive order will be on our Facebook page, and you can share it. And it will explain very clearly, as Hans does. All right, Hans, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Sandy. Bye-bye.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
Here's Pastor Jeff Shreve with From His Heart Ministries.
Think how different your life would be if you really believed that you, little old you, were a person whom Jesus loves. You let that settle in your heart and it blows you away every time you think about it. Wow.
Discover how to have a life that really matters. Join Pastor Jeff Shreve on From His Heart, weeknights at 6 Central, here on American Family Radio.
Hello, I'm Ed Vitagliano, co-host of Today's Issues each weekday morning on American Family Radio. I'm also Executive Vice President of American Family Association, the parent ministry of AFR. I just want to welcome the many new listeners to the AFR family as we have expanded into several new areas over the past 6 months. Who pays for AFR to stay on the air, you might be asking? Well, the answer is simple. AFR depends on our listeners to make financial contributions so that we can keep our radio stations on the air. If you appreciate the news, talk, information, and inspiration that you receive from AFR each day, we ask that you remember us financially when funds allow. You can make a donation at AFR.net or by calling 800-FAMILIES extension 2. That's AFR.net or 800-FAMILIES. Please keep us in your prayers as we continue to impact America for Christ.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, the man widely described as the new sheriff in town, President Donald Trump, met with actual sheriffs from around the country. The lawman's sense of relief was palpable at the prospect of a law and order chief executive, unlike his predecessor and a rival, determined to perpetuate Barack Obama's disastrous policies with respect to border insecurity, interior law enforcement, sanctuary cities, etc. Mr. Trump actually invited inputs from his guests, prompting several to welcome the change from President Obama's practice, as one put it, of allowing only, quote, an outgoing message about gun control and other things, unquote. Another marked difference will be evident from today on if, as expected, the Senate confirms Jeff Sessions to become our next Attorney General. He will have the back of U.S. law enforcement and help President Trump restore the practice of equal justice under the law. Hallelujah. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Betsy DeVos has just been sworn in as the new education secretary after Vice President Mike Pence made history by being the deciding vote.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative and the nomination is confirmed.
Despite two Republicans defecting, Maine's Susan Collins and Alaska's Lisa Murkowski. DeVos is now going to be part of the Trump cabinet, even though she was a target of Democrats, the teachers union, and the education establishment from the very beginning.
It's not Democrats who are bitter about the election. It's the American people who are bitter about the nomination of Betsy DeVos. And that's why millions and millions of calls, almost unprecedented on a cabinet nomination, have poured into this Capitol.
Democrats spent about 24 hours on the floor trying to pressure one more Republican to reject DeVos.
Is this the best of the best? Is this a knowledgeable candidate who understands the federal law? Is this a candidate who comes to us without conflicts of interest?
Key Republicans defended DeVos, noting President Trump didn't want someone from the education establishment.
Wouldn't you be surprised that a Republican president would be for charter schools? Are you really surprised that a Republican president has appointed an education secretary who wants to give low-income children more choices of schools?
Senator Jeff Sessions' nomination for Attorney General also passed a procedural hurdle, 52-47, setting up a final confirmation vote likely tomorrow evening if Democrats insist on running out the clock again. Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn said Democrats can stall, but the president will eventually have his cabinet.
They know we're going to be successful. So stunts like staying up all night and making speeches, I'm not sure who they're trying to impress other than their dysfunctional base.
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell predicted, quote, dysfunction fatigue will eventually set in if Democrats insist on burning 30 hours for each cabinet secretary, particularly since the remaining three who are getting votes this week are all expected to be confirmed.
All right, that's Mike Emanuel, Fox News. Sandy Rios back with you. So Betsy DeVos was confirmed last night. You heard it described. It was Mike Pence who cast the deciding vote. And, you know, aside from the fact that I'm concerned about Betsy DeVos' stand on Common Core, said it, so we'll let that stand. However, when Chuck Schumer says millions and millions of calls came in, where do you think those came from? You think, like, the average citizen is all upset about Betsy DeVos? You know, this is, again, where the left organizes. They spread around, you know, I don't know that George Soros was involved in this. I have nothing in print on that. He's involved in most everything else. He's paying for most of the left's moves, but they have their ways of manufacturing this stuff. You know, and they, you know, I've told you before, we know that there are fake Facebook and Twitter accounts, people that are hired to set these accounts up. And sometimes I'm sure they're not even hired. They just enjoy it. And so they're fake personas, and they go on like websites or Facebook pages or Twitter accounts like mine, like people like me, and say outrageous, horrible things. And they multiply their voice because they pretend like they are more than they are. So they have their ways of creating millions and millions of phone calls. So Betsy was confirmed. The issue of Senator Sessions, of course, last night bleeds into what we talked about with Hans just a few minutes ago, that Senator Warren was part of the filibuster, I guess. It's the all-night discussion of Senator Sessions as though he's a mystery to them. You know, he's been serving with them in the Senate chamber for years. They know his record. You heard Hans say that she was citing a letter by Coretta Scott King, which was based on, this is all territory that's been gone over. 30 years old. Not true, as Hans explained it, and she knew that, and yet she read it on the floor. So she was challenged, and Mitch McConnell finally told her that she was breaking Senate rules, and don't ask me to explain the Senate rules, but it has to do with accusing your fellow senator of disgracing the Senate or something, to some such thing. So they have banned her from saying anything until the Sessions nomination has been voted on, which is allegedly, supposedly, going to be tonight. One of the reasons they held up Sessions, well, people on the right held up Sessions' vote, was they wanted him to be available to vote for Betsy DeVos. So it's just an interesting little sidelight. So it should be voted on tonight, but of course, who knows what Schumer and the left will. There'll probably be millions and millions of phone calls too. But we do need Jeff Sessions in the Justice Department so badly. He's such a fine man, and I just can't wait for him to get in there. He's going to have his hands full. What you're seeing Donald Trump go through is going to be happening to Jeff Sessions. You just may not hear about all of it because he's not the top guy, but it's going to be a rough, rough ride. These men and women who have chosen to take this on, including Betsy DeVos, they love this country. And we may have different ideas about what we want to do, but they are putting their lives on the line. I think of Kellyanne Conway again. I think of Steve Bannon. I even think of Reince Priebus and the others that are who I'm not, you know, have a strong affection. I don't trust them as much as I do Kellyanne and Steve Bannon on issues. But nevertheless, they are paying a huge price themselves for trying to pull this country back from the brink. And I think, of course, the Trump family, the attacks against Melania Trump, the disgraceful things they've said about her. And yes, she has a past that is very vulnerable to those kinds of attacks, no question about it. But it's still embarrassing and hurtful, and you can imagine. And then they're coming after Ivanka and her line at Nordstrom's and Macy's and now Belk and other retailers. And so, you know, there's a price to be paid for taking a stand. I have this little card, actually. I should pause and read this. I have it in my studio. I have a stand where I put my papers. You can imagine I've got massive amounts of papers, but the ones I'm particularly working on are right in front of my face. And if I move those papers, I have some things posted on that to remind me of what I'm doing. And this is a great quote that someone shared with me. "You have no enemies, you say? Alas, my friend, the boast is poor. He who has mingled in the fray of duty that the brave endure must have made foes. If you have none, small is the work that you have done. You've hit no traitor on the hip. You've dashed no cup from perjured lip. You've never turned the wrong to right. You've been a coward in the fight." And that's a quote by Charles McKay. I don't even know who he was. He was born in 1814. So, you have no enemies, you say? Alas, my friend, the boast is poor. And so that applies to all of us, I think. And so these guys are making enemies and they're paying a great price. So, there. Elizabeth Warren, by the way, is a poll coming out of Massachusetts that only 44% of the voters in Massachusetts think that Elizabeth Warren deserves a re-election. 46% think that someone else should have a chance. So I think that's an interesting little stat. We'll see what happens. I was going to tell you other things, but I'm running out of time here. Let's see. Senator Cotton last night introduced a new bill, which we will talk about. And it has to do with cutting legal immigration by 50%. We've been allowing a 1 million immigrants in annually, and only 1% or 1 out of every 15 arrives in the United States on a skills-based visa. They've all been low earners. And that's who we've been letting in the country. And so they're trying to stop that in this effort by Senator Cotton. Hopefully we can talk to him about this because he's doing something great. By the way, the American Family Association is weighing in, encouraging President Donald Trump to sign that religious freedom executive order that I discussed at length with you a few days ago, the one that was leaked to the leftist press, the one that is absolutely fabulous, lawful, constitutional, restores the rights of Christians to exercise their faith in the workplace and their businesses. And so we are urging, the American Family Association, urging the president to keep his promise to protect religious liberty and sign that beautifully worded executive order. All right, if you want to know about that, go to afaaction.net, afaaction.net, and sign up for our alerts. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.